The other key issue that we're all facing is how addicted we are to our phones and our technology, our email, computers, all those things. Productive people like being productive all the time. So there's a part of me that knows if as long as my phone is in my hand, I can get things done. That is contrary to focusing on your children and making the most of family time. It's a hard practice, but come home at the end of the day for a specified amount of time, put your phone away.
Welcome to the Lead Like Jesus podcast. This is Karen Conley, and I'm in studio today with my husband, Chris Conley, who is a trustee for Lead Like Jesus. And we have the privilege of having a great friend and an incredible man of God, Andy Savage. Andy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Karen. It's great to be here. Chris, always good to be by your side.
Andy and I go way back. Andy is the teaching pastor at High Point Church. We started High Point Church together about 15 years ago. I'm really, really looking forward to this conversation because there's no one I believe in more than Andy Savage. And so all of you out there listening, you're going to hear so much great stuff. And I just want to introduce you to Andy Savage so that you can learn more from him and just glean so much about marriage and parenting in particular.
We've had the opportunity for 14 plus years to walk alongside Andy and his family. You might be thinking, as a leader, whether you're located in the United States or even abroad, what's a teaching pastor going to bring to my world that's going to help me as a leader? Andy has an incredible gift and niche within both the marriage and parenting world. Andy, every leader out there, their family, their leadership in the home is the first place that they want to know that they are a competent leader. But sometimes in the midst of success, the family gets neglected and it becomes the last place that we are proactive leading. And I know you have a heart for that. We're going to talk about a bunch of different areas, but maybe start with where your passion came from with this specific area.
One of the great privileges of my life is just growing up under my parents' leadership and getting to watch my mom and dad do married life. My dad was a small business owner, still runs his business today, but just watching the dynamics of balancing all those things. I'm one of four children, so my parents were in the midst of raising four kids and running a business, trying to keep life together and knowing they didn't have a perfect marriage, but they worked on things and they made sure to take care of their family amidst all of the busyness and taking care of all these other things. As pastors, and Chris, you experience this just as much as I do, if not more, the more we interact with people, we realize that all of the great achievements we have in life are really empty if those achievements result in a family being less than what we expect or would want. If family gets lost in the process, it really takes away from whatever could be these incredible achievements in the business context or in career.
Andy, the other day, you and I had the privilege of being a part of a funeral, a very dear family in the life of our church, the Willards. As a part of that, there was this quote that just kind of jumped out and caught your attention that I think applies to this subject of how do we maintain our priorities in the midst of all of our leadership, in the midst of all of our busyness. Share with us what that quote was.
Yeah, this was fantastic. The quote from this woman who had passed away, who had lived her life essentially focusing on her family, not having lots of resources, not being a wealthy individual. Her line was, "My family is my bucket list." And we think about all the things we would have on our bucket list, places we want to go travel and see, all the great experiences we want to have. And this woman distilled it down to her bucket list were her children and her grandchildren. And I think about how much that centers us and makes us think about what's really important in life are the people that are sitting in the wings at your funeral, that are reflecting on your life, and they're either grateful or there's regrets and there's pain or there's sorrow that certain things didn't happen. And this grandmother who passed away, there were no regrets. Certainly there were places in this world she didn't see and there were certain experiences she never had, but her family was taken care of. Her family was her bucket list. I thought that was an unbelievable statement.
In light of that statement, one of the things that you teach is this concept of 7,000 days.
7,000 days is roughly 18, 19 years. That's the time that we've calculated it takes to raise children from crib to college. And if you are privileged as a parent to have that entire journey in your child's life, to live with your children and raise children for 7,000 days, those days are critical. And every day day matters. And if there's a chance to encourage parents to be mindful of each and every day, knowing that you have the opportunity to make or break today as a parent, and to do it well, and to love your children through those days, and to understand that there are some days that are lousy and normal and mundane and grind on and on, but then there are some really big days in that 7,000-day window. And the thing that I've learned in my own parenting as a father of five kids, there are more normal, mundane days than there are anything else. If we can help parents catch a vision for the normal day, just being on point, on focus for a normal day, then we see families win and improve.
So in those 7,000 days for a parent, I think all of us can kind of understand how to factor in the urgency of every single day, the importance of every single day. But also, there's a lot of people that listen to this, they're grandparents. It's a second opportunity, or it's another 7,000 days in many regards. Talk to both the parent and the grandparent aspect of prioritizing these days.
Absolutely. In fact, I think what I've seen, and we have the privilege of having both sets of grandparents, my wife's parents and my parents who live 10 minutes from our driveway. I mean, they are in town and a part of our children's lives. And what I've been able to see, even just watching my own parents, there is a clarity that comes with being grandparents. There's this ability to sort of sort through the important and the unimportant. The little things just are off to the side, and they're able to really focus in on what's important. They're not in the grind of parenting like I am, where I'm watching every little thing and I'm annoyed by this and annoyed by that. They're able to really focus in and say, this is what's important right now. I've watched my mom or my dad just sit and read a book to my sons in the middle of the afternoon, and I would be wanting to get up and do something or work in the yard, and they're just able to sit and enjoy that with their grandchildren. And I think there's a unique phase of life for grandparents out there where they are able to say, you know, what's important here is not what we do necessarily or where we go. It's relationship time. It's building in that relationship. And that's why you'll find grandparents will often say, they'll comment about grandparenting as way better than parenting. It's way more fun. It's way more engaging because they're not worried about all those other things. They're worried about simply communicating how much they love and want to be with that child.
Andy, talking about these 7,000 days, are there certain things that in your mind you have solidified as the big rocks? Those big things that I can't worry about everything, but if I take care of these big things, the rest of the things will fall in place.
They're not going to be near as profound as you would want them to be, but they're actually fairly straightforward. I can't say they're easy to do, but they are fairly straightforward. There is this issue of consistency or routine that is vital for a healthy, thriving family life. If you can just evaluate the chaos in your life and realize where are things off track, and it almost always comes down to there's just inconsistency in the way we function in our family, in our home. Children, even teenagers, thrive when there is a predictable routine. They know when they're going to see mom and dad. My children, they know at 5:30 p.m., they have an internal clock. I should be home about then. And they just know, they hover around the door or at this time of year out in the driveway. They're waiting on dad to come home. There's this internal clock. And that's been built over the seasons, over the years, through consistency. So I always tell parents, stop worrying about being a perfect parent. You're going to be an imperfect parent. Imperfection is overcome by consistency. If we're just consistent, if we're just developing the routines and knowing those key moments each day that really matter. Dinner around the table. Even secular research proves dinner around the table 4 nights a week is a game changer in family dynamics. So if you want to improve family life, improve relationships with your children, have dinner around the table 4 nights a week. That's an undeniable way to win in your family. And that's a routine issue. That's making sure that we're around the table 4 nights a week. That means you got to plan food. You got to get things together. You got to prioritize that time.
Our children are a little bit older than yours. There's been those moments where 4 nights worked for a while, and then we hit the teenage years and sports and coaches and obligations that they all had in study groups. And I would just affirm exactly what you're saying, but also to say, we aim for 4, but if we get 3, we don't beat ourselves up about it.
Absolutely.
And so go for what you can, even if it seems a little bit unrealistic and some days it doesn't work, don't give up.
And that goes back to the point that you can blow it any given day, and you can start over tomorrow. That's the beauty of parenting. You don't have to solve this in one day. If you have a bad day, just regroup and start again tomorrow. That's the beauty of this 7,000-day journey. The urgency is 7,000 days is a lot shorter than we think. At the same time, it's long enough to have some flexibility. There's a lot of grace in there. We can get on track tomorrow if we have to. And that's the beauty of this journey of parenting.
Let me tell you how short 7,000 days is. Right now with our son, we've got 51 weeks, 358 days, 8,603 hours until he graduates high school. And that radically influences how Karen and I are going to plan over the next year, because it's his senior year. But what if we plan every year as a senior year?
That's right. That's the hope in this whole conversation. When you mentioned being proactive, it literally means sitting down and thinking about what you want to see happen in your family. And it doesn't require lots of resources. It doesn't require that you're super creative. It just requires sitting down and thinking about it. And I think that's where most of us as parents get off. We're in the grind of parenting. We don't have time, or don't think we have time, to sit down and make a plan. We have to. And if that means turning the TV off and taking an hour with your spouse, if you're married, to have that conversation, it's worth it to say, what do we need to see in our family life? How do we need to leverage these 7,000 days so we get the most out of it? Because it's like any other investment of your time. If you go on vacation, you will naturally do this. You will naturally proactively plan because you want to get the most out of the expense and the time and the getaway. You got to think that way with your kids. What do we get the most out of? How do we leverage these moments for their greatest gain?
When we think about the people who are listening, we've got a lot of people who are business leaders, business owners, executives. They're incredibly busy people. A lot of them travel a lot. They've been to time management seminars.
Oh, yeah.
And they know all the stuff, but yet it's still hard to do. What are some of the best practices that you've discovered as a father of five? And by the way, when you answer this question, tell us the names of your children, the ages of your children.
So we have five boys. It starts at the top with my 12-year-old Drew. Next son is 9. That's Cooper. Wesley is 7. Ford is almost 5. He'll be 5 next week. And Joshua is 3.
And in one of these podcasts, we want to talk a little bit more about Cooper. Cooper has Downs. Andy has written a great book for the special needs community, and specifically for people who have children who have Downs, The Adventures of Cooper the Turtle.
Yeah.
So we're going to elaborate on that a little bit more, but I just kind of want to get that teaser in right here.
We're blessed to have Cooper in our lives. The question you asked about how do you manage the busyness, some of it is just acknowledging these are the busy years. If you have little children, especially, these are busy years, and there's just no changing that. There's a certain amount of chaos that just lives in your life, and that's part of it. My wife would say, just because they're little and just because it's chaotic does not mean it has to lose all sense of order. So there's a balance there. She's great at that. She often talks about what it takes to create peace in your home. Doesn't mean that every toy has to be picked up at the end of the day. It does mean that there has to be a sense of order and a sense that you're not drowning. If we can just keep our heads above water in many ways, that's part of what you're aiming for in those younger years. When your kids get to be more teenagers, the busyness shifts and changes. You tend to have a few more hours because kids stay up later in the evenings and things like that. If you have kids in the younger years, I would say to any executive leader out there, you've got to put family time on your calendar and protect it like it's a meeting with your most important client. You've got to guard it and protect it and get home. Even if that means you've got to pick up work, which I often do after the kids go to bed, if I've got to do that to protect 5:30 to 8:30, that's my 3-hour window. My kids are all in bed by 8:30 at night. I have 3 hours a day to see my children. That's a significant moment in my day. So if I can pick up work, if I have to, after 8:30, I'll do that to see my kids. But I protect that 3-hour window.
Our kids are 17 and 16, and I wish they were in bed by 8:30 at night. We're lucky if we get midnight.
The other key issue that we're all facing is how addicted we are to our phones and our technology, our email, computers, all those things. Productive people like being productive all the time. So there's a part of me that knows if as long as my phone is in my hand, I can get things done. That is contrary to focusing on your children and making the most of family time. It's a hard practice, but come home at the end of the day for a specified amount of time, put your phone away.
Be present when you are present.
Be present when you're present. There's nothing that replaces being focused on your kids. I've heard someone say this, and I'll quote it to all of us listening. It's a good reminder for me as well. Our children will be the first generation growing up that are very familiar with the tops of their parents' heads because we're staring down at our phones all day. Our kids see the tops of our heads. We need to give our kids eye-to-eye, face-to-face communication. And when our kids ask us a question, we don't need to say, hold on, because we're checking our email. We need to be able to say, I'm at home, and you get present, active time from me to focus on you.
So in this 7,000 days concept, there are some parents and some grandparents who feel like they're opting in halfway because maybe they weren't a person of faith in the early days. Maybe they had some chaos in their life, some struggles in their life, and they weren't the parent that they wanted to be. So speaking to take the days you have, don't worry about the days that are in the past, and make the most of what is present now and what's in the future.
I've never met an individual, child, teenager, adult child, I've never met a single person that didn't want their mom or their dad to be their best. I've never met someone. Everybody wants mom or dad to be good at being a mom or a dad. So if you feel like you've blown it at any point along the way, deep down, your children are longing for you to make a change. Be the best you can be today. That's what they want. So if you feel like my kids are 16, 17 now, and I blew it when they were little, then you regroup today and you give your 16 or 17-year-old your absolute best from here forward. If you have to go to them and say, look, hey, I blew it when you were little, then acknowledge that. Make that apology. Make that correction. Do a lot of men's conferences and talking to men. This is a big deal in the male world. You've even shared stories about this, Chris. As men, sometimes we forget how powerful our words are. And maybe in your mind, as you listen to this, you know that you've said something to one of your children that damaged them, that hurt them. And there's a part of you that thinks, I've hurt my child and there's nothing I can do. I'll give you an idea what you can do. You can acknowledge what you said. And you can go to them and say, you know what? I should have never said that to you. I know I can't take it back, but I do want to drown it in what I should have said. I want to bury it in what I should have said. And so, son or daughter, here's what I want to say to you. I want to bury that thing I should have never said when you were 8. And I want to bury it today now that you're 20 or 25 or 30. I'm going to bury that. And I'll tell you what, there's not a child out there that's been wounded by their parents that will not receive that. They want to know that mom or dad really does care, or they're proud, or they love them, or whatever it may be.
Every single person listening to that podcast, if they have children, they live with that memory of that time where they lost it, where they were tired, where they weren't on their game, where they let their anger get the best of them in that moment. One of the things to piggyback on that, we often say rules without relationship equals rebellion. And sometimes as task-oriented leaders, we can try to allow our parenting to come through the rules. And we might be very structured and we have made sure we put things in place. But because of our schedule and because of maybe making some times we've put business before family, that relationship has lacked. So I would just affirm what you're saying and to go, you know what, if you're in that place as a parent, what you just said, go to them with the relationship first. A lot of times the rebellion you see is them crying out for attention, them wanting you to be present and to say something to keep them from doing what they're doing if you have a child that maybe is a little bit older and is acting out.
Absolutely. I had a conversation with an executive 2 weeks ago, and he called me and he was extremely angry at his son who just graduated high school. Four of his buddies took him out after his graduation and bought him a tattoo. It was a simple, small, probably very insignificant tattoo, but he knew that his father had told him, this is what the dad is telling me, I told him that he is not to get a tattoo until he's 25. And when he's 25 and do what he wants, the dad was trying to protect him from a lapse in judgment, everything that we would want our kids to think through. This is what this guy's telling his son. This executive was hot. He was so angry. And he's calling me, and he had devised his plan of response to this, which was going to involve forcing his son to work all summer to earn enough money to pay the dermatologist to remove the tattoo. And if he saw it at any point in time, he was going to kick the son out of the house. He has to go live somewhere else. So I get his response. It's understandable. There's always these things that trigger emotion and anger in us as parents. But I had to talk to this executive father at this point and say, look, your son's going to college in about 3 months. And you have an opportunity here to make or break your relationship with your son. And it's not worth a tattoo. And I said, you have an opportunity to use this tattoo situation. And he's telling me, Andy, you don't know. This is like a slap in the face. I said, you're absolutely right. It is a slap in your face. And he needs to know it's a slap in your face. But he also needs to know that a slap in the face does not run his dad off, and that you're going to look at him in the eye and say, look, I want you to make wise decisions, and I want you to know that when you go to college, we're going to let this one go with the tattoo, but when you go to college and you act irresponsibly, your tuition is at stake. I will not fund your immaturity. I say you have the opportunity to leverage a smaller act of foolishness to protect against the larger act of foolishness that you know will be tempting him in the coming months. So fight for relationship. And I told him this line before he hung up the phone. I said, whatever you do, if you're going to make an error here, err on the side of relationship. That's what we need to think through as parents. We can't let these small things, even if they're highly offensive things, we just can't sacrifice a relationship over them. They're not worth it.
There are those times the tattoo in that way is kind of the symptom.
That's right.
And we've got to get beyond the offense of the symptom, and we've got to get to the core issue. That core issue drives you back to the relationship, and it drives you back to what's wise and unwise. And the whole thought there, like you said, set him up in college to make more wise decisions than unwise decisions.
Yeah. And I would say that to any parent out there, whatever discipline you're trying to achieve or punishment you're trying to execute on your child at that moment in time, remember that punishment is not just related to the recent offense. It is related to the future mentality and attitude and obedience of the future. So your discipline, your punishment paves the road for the next phase of life, for the post-offense. You've got to prepare your child for what's to come. So you can't just think about these moments as isolated incidents with your kids. You're constantly teaching and training your child the way they should go. And that's why those moments are so important.
Andy, as we begin to wrap up this podcast, talk about the role that your faith should play in your parenting, and then how you try to build that faith into the life of your children and grandchildren.
The classic line is, more is caught than taught when it comes to giving your children values and principles to live by. And at home, I would encourage all parents, and I would include this with grandparents as well, you need to craft the type of personal disciplines and personal life decisions that set an example for your kids, that they catch from you a deep and meaningful faith, that they see you reading your Bible, they catch you having that priority time with God each day, that there's a sense that your relationship with God matters in your day. It's a priority to you. Not just allowing things to be caught, you also have to teach things. You also have to say things. Take those opportunities to attach the truths of God to different circumstances. I think this is far more effective in the real-time moments of life rather than the artificially crafted or those moments where you try to
the devotional.
Yeah, to create a teachable moment. Just do it in the flow of how things are going. This happened to me last weekend. We were doing yard work. My son asked me a question, a real deep theological question. Did Jesus ever disobey his parents? I'm not going to get into that now. But we're doing yard work. And I thought, that's so much better than me trying to have a Bible study with my son. Let it flow out of our relationship so that what's normal in a father-son relationship is we talk about God.
You do devotional sometimes before your sports games. I've never seen a kid pay attention at the devotional before the game.
No. It's too artificial. And I would say the same for grandparents out there. You have a different voice in the life of your grandchildren than their parents. And you can be a very supportive and helpful voice, but you can also be an incredible voice of faith for your kids. You're standing on a larger platform. You've lived more years. And when you communicate your faith and you tell those stories and you're sure to include how your faith impacted you in those different decisions or moments in your life, your grandchildren pick up on how real your faith is. And oftentimes that's the more powerful voice than even the mom or the dad, is to hear it from a grandparent.
Andy, we have come to the end of our time for this particular podcast, but before we sign off, share with our audience a little bit about your new book and why you wrote it and how they might be able to get a hold of it.
The Adventures of Cooper the Turtle was inspired by my son Cooper, who has Down syndrome. The idea behind the book is simply a fun little children's book that allows parents to read it to their children or children to read this book and understand they can look around themselves. They can find those other children with special needs or special challenges. And they can come alongside and help these kids achieve and have an adventure and have fun in a way that is really a way to show love to those around them. So my hope is this book is simply about friendship and helping others. My hope is that children will start to see a more redemptive way they can interact with their classmates or their friends down the street and really just honor those people. And my hope too with it is to just tell a little bit of our story personally, my personal story with our son and some of the challenges we have faced and the ways that really God has shown us so much of his grace. grace through our son.
In addition to that great book, which is an incredible children's book, you've also written another one called Giant Love. So for all the parents and all the grandparents out there, tell us about Giant Love and tell us where they can find these resources.
All the books that I've written are available at andysavage.com, andysavage.com. The Giant Love book was inspired by parents asking a very valid question. How do we tell our kids about the gospel? How do we teach our children the story of Jesus and what he means to us? It started out as a simple seminar that turned into, let's craft a children's book that helps parents tell this story in a very magical and imaginative way. And children begin to lock in on this story. They were in big trouble. There were these big giants of sin and consequence in our lives. But through the story, we realized that all the trouble that sin caused, God came in and saved the day. He was the greater giant. His giant love overcame all the obstacles and made a way for us to be forever friends with him. So this book becomes a tool for parents to use to explain the gospel to their children in a way that makes sense to kids. The key to this book is that it's not a preacher or a children's pastor or some official person telling your kids the story. It comes to the voice of a mom or a dad or a grandmother or a grandfather telling this child the most important story that we could ever tell a kid.
Andy, we're going to get you back and tackle the topic of marriage because that applies to so many of the leaders that we have in this audience. Thank you for joining us. If you want more information on Lead Like Jesus or the newest copy of Lead Like Jesus Revisited, go to leadlikejesus.com.